Welcome back to the Christopher Scott Show. I got something a little bit different for you today that I think you might find pretty fascinating, a perspective that I guarantee you're not going to get really in any other circle, if many at all. Not completely. The way of thinking that I'm going to describe is not completely unique, but what I'm about to tell you I don't think has been discussed maybe ever, all right? It's kind of a little bit of a weird tie-in, so just give me a minute to kind of explain to you what's going on here. You know, if you've been listening to this show, that I have another show called Project Chaos. We have a radio show and a podcast, and we just launched a book tour. I was up at the VFW in Red Hill, Pennsylvania on Saturday night, spoke for about 40 minutes up there. Fantastic time, fantastic reaction to the message, the crowd, all of it. Very happy about all that. Now, I'm not going to replay that here. That's not my intention. Something else that I uncover, but I need to give you a little background to explain to you what it is. Long story short, Project Chaos is a radio show and a podcast that is discussions with veterans, where we talk about the truth about what's happened in various military campaigns, and also to share the mindset of how veterans think so that people can understand that. And I think it's at a time that our country desperately needs it. That's the purpose of all that. But that's not what I want to talk about today. In the course of all this, it's been a fascinating story of its own. When I started that project, I wanted it to be very interview-centered. In fact, the whole idea was to every show necessarily, not every single one, of course, but as many as possible, there would be other veteran guests, multiple potentially. And I got started into that, and here I've been doing this monologue. We've had a few interviews on here, but not many, that's for sure. And even looking back, the interviews that I have done here, I don't think they were so great because I didn't know what I was doing. And like I've been most of my life, I just jump right into things. I figure it out as I go. Bring everybody else along for the ride, right? But that's what I did. I started Project Chaos. I did the first two interviews with guys from my unit. So it worked out fine, but it's very much a struggle for me. I had to take a break from it. That was kind of funny. It was, where's the interviews? Well, I need a little time to, how much time? I don't know. I got to work something out. But I got lucky. I got interviewed. I was interviewed for a station out in Buffalo, two stations actually, an Army guy out there. And unbeknownst to him and me at the time, I got a real lesson in how to do an interview, and I'm really grateful for that opportunity. The grace of God, it changed everything for me. And once I was able to put that together, the rapport that I'm able to gain with these combat veterans and to get them to open up and talk to me is really phenomenal, something very, very special. I'm proud of that. I really am. And in the process, it's been really good. Good healing and beneficial to veterans and many other people, really. It's pretty amazing. I'm very proud of that, too. But it hasn't been my purpose. It's not a 501c3. We're looking right now at organizing that in a more formal fashion. But I may just go LLC. It's never meant to be a charitable organization. And I don't know. Maybe I need to rethink that, too. But we'll see. It's all a journey, I guess, in that regard. I don't want to get too sidetracked. Interviews is my point. So part of the other shtick with this is, you know, of course, everybody wants to land the big interview, right? And not me, of course. Of course, I'm going to look at these things a little differently. And I say, we're not SEAL Team 6. We're the war pigs. I want to hear from the average guy. I want to hear from the PFC, the Lance Corporal, guy who was on the front lines. Not even necessarily on the front lines. Is the guy who's actually doing the work, the guy who's actually touching these things. And we found it. We found it. So Monday, we had a guy on the radio. I had previously interviewed him. This guy named John Podlosky wrote a book, among others, called Cherries. You can check it out if you're interested, cherrieswriter.com. He writes about Vietnam, and that's where he was, Vietnam-era veteran. Only about 800,000 of these guys left alive. And if you know anything about Vietnam veterans, there's some real crusty guys, man. I don't say that to be rude, but there's some cynical, callous people, Vietnam veterans, and for good reason, really. Not so much this guy. I didn't find that at all with this guy. Really, you know, pretty cool, laid back, pretty smooth guy. And I should have known he was what I call a hunter. What does that mean? You're in the military, you got guys that are on ships, on planes, airplanes. They may even be shooting, you know, crew-served weapons from the out of the door of a helicopter. You've seen that. Vehicle-mounted weapons. They can be hunters. They can be hunters. The guys who are actually engaging. And that's usually the term that you hear they use in the military. They were engaging the enemy. Let me explain to you what that means. That means your commanding officer is going to say to you and your group of men, I want you guys to go from here to there and go flush out those Vietnamese fighters in there and either kill them or capture them. Your choice. And in the meantime, they're going to try and kill or capture you and probably do it in the most heinous fashion possible so you don't repeat that mistake again. And this is what they did day in and day out. Crazy when you think about it. Think about all the things that are going to happen and change and all that. I bring this guy on, I do this interview, and I had previously interviewed him mainly about the book that he wrote, and this time I wanted to talk to him about his Vietnam experience. And I'll tell you this, these interviews have been the most rewarding endeavor I've ever done. The men that I've interviewed, I'll tell you, I'll never forget the interviews any more than I would forget the guys I served with. And you talk to anybody in the military, and there's just this certain memory for certain things. Not everything, of course. Not everything, but I found patterns. For example, every veteran I talked to, they remember the day they raised their right hand and made that oath. They remember that. Nobody forgets that. They remember going through MEPS and dropping their drawers in front of 100 people. That began the journey. Drop your drawers. Take it like a man. I shouldn't have said that, should I? I bring this guy on. I wanted to talk to him about the book. I wanted to talk to him about his Vietnam experience. I said it's been the most rewarding. It's also been the most effort difficult for me. And yesterday, I said that I've said on the radio show that I wouldn't get emotional. I wouldn't let my emotions get the best of me. It was tough yesterday. They ended up bleeping me. That was the first time that happened because I said pissed on. I never knew that would get you bleeped. And we were supposed to have a second commercial break. And I didn't take it. I didn't take it. And this is the part I wanted to talk to you about. This guy, he gets drafted into Vietnam. He didn't want to go. I didn't really get into that with him, but he was drafted. So you know, whether he then acquiesced and bought into the whole thing. But I didn't really get that sense. I get the sense he was more like a deer in the headlights following orders. And he goes out to this frontline army infantry unit. And I'm not going to go through the whole thing. If you're interested in listening to it, shoot me an email or leave a message at ChristopherScottShow.com. You can email me at info@ChristopherScottShow.com. I'll be happy to send you the links to the interviews with John. But here's the part that I wanted to say. So he goes over there, gets drafted, and he's over there in this frontline infantry, and he's talking about it, sleeping in swamps. He'd be out in the field for 5 or 6 weeks at a time. Pull back after 5 or 6 weeks to either a fire base or a base camp that could get cleaned up, get a little sleep, get a little rest. And we spent much longer out in the field, by the way, than that before rotating back. But even still, the environment that he was in, that was brutal, brutal. To go to sleep at night laying on the swampy ground, people have no idea. You know, lay on the wet ground and cover yourself with a poncho. Snakes, bugs, spiders as big as your hand. He said, you're in the jungle, for God's sake. You got to set up flashbangs, perimeter defense. People have no idea. You're going to lay there. Before there was night vision, there was not much fighting to do at night because nobody could see anything. You can't light any light. The enemy would see you immediately. So the fighting basically, I don't want to say it stopped at night. It just changed a lot. Wouldn't be like what we have today with night vision capabilities. Shooting blind back then. So nighttime, they would actually try to, you know, lay down and get some rest or what have you. There's not much else to do. There was no way to really sleep by any practical terms. There was no rest. And I talked to them about this. You need to talk about battle fatigue. People have no idea. Once that cold sets in and you're wet all the time, and it's hard to do anything. Everything requires a lot of effort, just discomfort in every way imaginable. And on top of that, a large number of casualties and a lot of killing on both sides that took place, a lot of heinous things. I got to interview another guy next Monday, and he tells the story of this reoccurring nightmare that he has. He fires a round out of the tank and through the scope or whatever they have there, he can see the round hit and the exploding body parts of the Vietnamese on the other end. And at the same time, they're firing a responding mortar fire, and he sees the body parts of his fellow Marines flying through the air. Just imagine these scenes for a second. The Marine volunteered. Best I know, I didn't ask him, but I'm pretty sure he did. The Army soldier that I interviewed did not. He was drafted. Why is that so significant? He got to the part, this is what I wanted to talk to you about. He got to the part about when he got home. And I asked him, what was it like coming home at that time? And you already know the answer to this. These guys were spit on. He talked about it in detail. And that's when I got in trouble on the radio, basically. The sound engineers were incredible, by the way. It's funny because I hadn't heard back from them initially. I never got a confirmation it was coming on. So I actually would do two commercial breaks. And I'm like, I may have to rework half this show on the fly, which I was completely prepared to do. That's the benefit of 6.5 years of experience doing a monologue over 1,600 episodes. But, I wasn't sure I was going to go. I took a third commercial break. I told the sound engineer, hey, I may need to peel off for a second to give myself, you know, restructure here the way the changes came last minute. Well, then right before we're getting ready to go on, John calls in. We're live, going hot with him. So it was easy enough for me. I really had no problem with all that. But for the sound engineer, it's quite a shift going on, reordering the brakes, and he's got other things going on. But they really did a great job with all that. I was really happy with it. But this guy coming home, he talks about being spit on and eggs thrown on him. And I think about that scene. I think about myself coming home. He was 20 years old when he got back to CONUS. I was 19. And when we landed in Maine, there was a group of people there who they were families primarily of Vietnam veterans. And this is like 3 o'clock in the morning. We landed there in Bangor, Maine. We've been flying for, I don't know how many hours at that point, 10, 12, probably 15, maybe more. I seem to remember something like a 30-hour flight back to Hawaii. I remember one of the hardest things is coming back to the East Coast and not going home at that time, going back to Hawaii. But anyway, when we came home, they had people there in Bangor, Maine. And these were people that were brought there by these Vietnam veterans because of what they had experienced. 3 o'clock in the morning, Bangor, Maine, and there's this huge group of people there to greet us. Just a wonderful, wonderful reception. Why? Because they weren't going to allow that history to repeat itself. But I'm listening to this guy talk about this, and I'm thinking to myself, who are these slimy scumbags that did this to our American veterans? And am I the only one who thinks like this? And this is the part that I wanted to tell you, if I can. And obviously, I get a little emotional about it for a few different reasons. What did this guy do to deserve this from his country? He didn't join. He didn't start the war. He didn't do any of that. But yet these filthy, vile, highly educated pigs, right, that they're going to say, oh, we didn't know. Well, you didn't know what? That he was drafted? You didn't know there was a draft going on, you little liberal commie pricks? You sat there and did nothing with your little filthy deferments and hid behind God knows what? It wasn't enough. You couldn't keep your filthy mouth shut that you're going to come out and you're going to treat other human beings like that? After all that they went through, after all that they endured, think about the damage that was done to those men. What did they do to deserve it? Go ask that crump bum Bernie Sanders or that there's any of those filthy pigs in our Congress. Where the hell were you during Vietnam, Chuck Schumer, all these pigs? Where were you during the protests? Where the freak was John McCain? You never heard him speak up about it. I listened to what that man said. I got to tell you something. I'm so damn disgusted with this country. It makes me sick. To the point of damn near irredeemable when you think about it. So freaking worked up. I'm sweating. Now you can understand why I got bleeped out on the radio. Stay with me a second. I know this is a little bit of a rant, and I think I've earned it, for God's sake. But you need to listen to what I'm telling you. Coming out of Vietnam, there was two paths that the military men took. Half of them, maybe three paths. Some of them just quietly acquiesced and kind of went back to the thing and just whatever they did to bury their demons. And the other half just was the other third is just a destroyed mess, very predictably, on some level to this day. There's drugs, alcohol, PTSD, Agent Orange. The list goes on and on and on, how these guys suffered and suffered and suffered. But then you have another group, guys like John Podlasky, guys like my first Sergeant Bratcher, guys like our Motor T section chief. What the hell was his name? Vietnam veterans, the Motor T section. This guy's a staff sergeant. And I'm getting in the Marine Corps in 19. I showed up at Alpha Battery, 89. He's a Vietnam veteran, a staff sergeant. What does that tell you? He got busted in rank a couple of times. When I was up at the VFW, I told the story how I got in a fight in Okinawa and was written up on charges and had to go in front of the captain for what's called office hours. It's a non-judicial punishment. So I don't know that brig time was an option necessarily, not likely, but I was facing some punishment for that. And little did I know we were going to be deploying less than 2 weeks later, a couple weeks later. We were in Okinawa, and they go in for this office hours. The commanding officer slams the record book shut, and he says, you're lucky I don't have time for this crap, Kunkel. Get out of here. Get out of there, I did. A couple weeks later, we were deploying. I was on the advance party. I think he might have had some idea that that was going to be happening. Why do I say all that? Well, it's a bit of a badge of honor, those of us that were willing to fight no matter what, at any cost, it didn't matter. Why is that, by the way? Why is that? I learned this, and it's a tough road for veterans. And I know this at the time. You know, I was 17, 18, 19-year-old. Dumb, arrogant, jarhead, blockhead, jarhead, and got myself in plenty of trouble as a result. Learned a lot of lessons the hard way, you know. But the violence, because it's absolute, you know. For example, one altercation, and I know this is going to sound funny to a lot of people, but it's just a different environment. So I was a Lance Corporal. This corporal, he moved my motorcycle out of my parking spot to put his car there. And, you know, where I come from, you don't do that kind of stuff. I go, I'm just lay this guy out for this. Next thing you know, I'm up in front of the first sergeant. Uncle, you don't lay your hands on the NCOs. And, I forget, I think I got in some unofficial trouble for that. He kind of let me slide on that. But the violence, at the end of the day, there's no greater authority. Because if you and I disagree and you're dead, then I'm right and you're wrong. Pretty simple. Not much arguing about it at that point. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's a good idea. And you've heard me talk many times. I'm not a violent person. I don't want to see any conflict. I've said many times as well, the Marine Corps has never declared war. John Podlasky, the Army soldier who was drafted, didn't start the gosh dang war. Didn't want to go. All he wanted to do was get home. All of us. All we wanted to do was go home. Rare exception, I think. But I've been talking about this mayhem among us, the Bolsheviks among us, and I realized who they are. I realized who the ringleaders are. I realized what is the source of all this poison in our country right now. This is the epiphany that I had. Go back and look, and it's the filthy commies that were here in the 60s, the same ones that were organizing the protests and spitting on the faces of the protesters. Who are those people? What are their names? Why don't we know? Where's the investigation into that? I tell you, some people hear me talking like this. Ooh, what's he talking about? I'm asking, who are the people behind this? They're still with us today. John Podlasky, 800,000 Vietnam veterans still alive. That means the protesters that spit on them are still alive. What are their names? What are they doing today? What are the chances you'll find them in Harvard University, University of Pennsylvania? It's interesting. The producer down at the radio show, if I recall correctly, I think he said he was on the protester side. Wonder if I'll hear anything from him about the rant on the radio show. Listen, I'm not suggesting that protesting against the war is wrong. I'm actually kind of thankful for the protesters in a sense. And I've said this before, it's great to pray for peace, great to protest for peace. We should all be working for peace, not war. I'm not glorifying war. I'm not glorifying warriors. I'm not glorifying anything. I've said it over and over again that war is a failure of humanity. How in the heck in this day and age with all this so-called progress do we have any wars at all? But the fact of the matter is that life is life and the real world is the real world, and that means that there's security threats and that we have to maintain security, because if it's not locked and secure, then you don't own it. If you don't control it, you don't own it. Can't keep it secure, you don't own it. And anytime somebody, something could come in and wipe it out, take it. Has to be kept secure. Secure from the elements, secure from animals and vermin, and secure from enemies, foreign and domestic, right? And this is the way it works. So we have to have a military. We have to have a defense. And I agree that it's gotten polluted, and our military today no longer represents that. We need to fix that. I agree with all that. But I don't know how we get to the point that we blame the Lance Corporal and spit in their face for it. Do good people do that? I ask this question over and over again. And what exactly did they want? What exactly did these communists in our country want? Why don't we ask that? Was it really peace, or was it simply to destroy us? You know, he talks about, and this part of it really got me fired up, it didn't end with the spitting and the tomatoes. They couldn't get jobs. They were blacklisted. They were shamed every day. Can you imagine coming home a young man after going through all that, proud of your service, and you can't even talk to me? You wonder why they don't talk about it. You wonder why they don't talk about it. He said they hid the fact that they were veterans, afraid they couldn't get jobs. This is what our own Americans did. When I talk about the Bolshevik Revolution, and you look at how the Russian soldiers returning back from World War II, how they retreated, jailed, and thrown in the damn gulags, and you tell me it's not going on today. Maybe not the same scale, but I'm not so sure about that either. Go fight a million miles away, got to come home and fight some more because of the commies here, the filthy commies here. Look at what the commies do. Look at what the soldier does. One is completely selfless. One is completely selfish. You go look at that filth vermin, stealing that term from Michael Savage, Chuck Schumer, and those like him. Sleazeballs. Some of them Republicans, too. You look at what they do, all they care about is themselves and lining their filthy pockets. And if there's something in it for them, then it must be good. If not, then it must not be good. They don't care about anybody else. And you carry that forward into our society today, that level of selfishness. And you look at all the problems that we have, the drug problem, the kids growing up as trannies. And I know this isn't the case in every case, but how many of these homes are fatherless, split families? because the parents are so selfish, they just turn their backs on their kids. Now, I've been divorced, too. I'm not judging. I'm going to tell you something right now. I never, never once turned my back on my kids, nor would I. Nor would I. I had a spouse that did, but I never did, never once. Never was one of my children without a father in their life. And I'm thankful for those. And I'll never let go. It's so important to me. I don't know how it couldn't be. How do people? But that one act. I was listening to a friend tell a story. You know, it's a woman. She's in her mid 30s. I got, I don't know, 2-3 kids. The dad comes home. This guy in his 30s, right? Masculine guy, plays sports. Comes home. He says he thinks he's gay. Dude, listen, I don't know, whatever the youngest kid is, 6, 7, 8, you know, you got about 12 years of not being gay. And once they're out, I guess you can go do whatever you want if that's what you really want to do. What do you call that? I don't know, I'm confused. No, you're selfish. You're a man, 30 years old, any age, you got children, you got a responsibility. Does this need to be taught and explained and agreed upon? You know, this guy, these people that do, and it happens every day. People, well, we couldn't get along. We're going to get divorced. Yeah, the kids are fine. You know, we're still getting along. We're working it out for the kids. No, it's not. It's not normal. It's not working. And I'm not judging. And I'm not telling people to stay in bad relationships. I'm not a therapist. But, you know, it seems to me that a lot of these relationships aren't so bad. People just don't want to stick it out. It's selfish. And I get it. I get it. I've been unhappy too. And relationships have ended. But does anybody stop and consider the children? And then the kid's sitting there 10 years old, the parents split up, so everything's okay. And all of a sudden, 12, they got blue hair, and they're wondering, oh, boy, I'm really confused about everything. Gee, I don't know. Maybe because the world's going nuts, their parents are nuts. They can't stand any, can't understand anything. They're confused about everything. And what do we do? The same thing when we did to the soldiers coming back from Vietnam. We blame the kids that were abused by this crap in the first place. Ah, weirdo, transgender. These kids are crying out for help. For the love of damn God. I don't know if I'm making any sense today, and I'm not going to rant on forever. I just want to tell you, that interview, and the understanding that suddenly the world took on a different perspective. It's like Ronald Reagan talked about this, did he not? The communists in Hollywood, look at them now. Everything that's being exposed about them. And they support it, and they hide it, and they continue to destroy good people. And I think it's always the struggle. Let me leave you with this thought. Because you can't just throw your hands up. Oh, geez. The struggle never ends. And that's why we got to stick together. And that's why these words that we speak become so important. And telling these stories and these truths, I hate that term, so that people can see this and understand. I hope I've shared something valuable with you today. You know, we're still working on the studio here. We got some new equipment coming in. I'm going to say by next week, you're going to see some, hopefully, the final tweaks. I always say that, but I'm really happy with what we're doing here. We wanted to improve the quality of the videos, and I think we've done that. And both camera setups are going to be 4K, if you even know what that means. I don't. I think we got the microphones, the software set up to where there's no fuzziness, there's no graininess, and hopefully we got the sound quality and everything dialed in. Thanks for staying patient with me as we worked all that out. And I'm looking forward to growing the audience and continue to put out a lot of great material. And I appreciate all the support in the meantime. Make sure you go to ChristopherScottShow.com. Sign up for my email list there. If you have a minute, go to ProjectChaos.org and check out the great work that we're doing over there. And God willing, I'll be back tomorrow. I sure hope to see you there. In the meantime, make it a great day.